Hi, my name is Gavin Scott. I'm a gay Native American student from rural Oklahoma who attends Columbia University. And on this week's episode, find out about my college experience and my journey.
One Fly Trio is a lively and engaging podcast designed to be your guide and mentor as you navigate the often challenging world of higher education. Your host, Linnell, a college admissions and financial aid guru,
and Rashid, a dedicated advocate for the success of underrepresented communities, team up with a rotating guest host who has lived the first generation, limited income, fly experience.
One Fly Trio will explore all aspects of the college journey, from college essays and financial aid and course selection to social life, internships, post-graduation plans, and more. We take a deep dive into the factors that contribute to success in college and beyond, demystifying areas that have historically been challenging for underrepresented communities.
Each episode is packed with real stories, expert advice, and actionable tips, all delivered in a fun, easy-to-digest format. Join us on One Fly Trio as we break down barriers, challenge stereotypes, and empower students to achieve their dreams. Because when it comes to success,
we're all in this together.
Gavin, welcome to One Fly Trio, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So I would love it if you would start out by telling our Fly listeners a little bit about yourself. What's your backstory? Tell us a little bit about the history of you.
Yeah, so my name is Gavin Scott. I'm from a small town in Oklahoma called Shakota, Oklahoma. I've grown up on the Muscogee Creek Nation Reservation, and I'm a part of the Cheyenne Arapaho tribe. And I currently am a rising senior at Columbia University in New York City.
So you went from rural Oklahoma to New York City.
Yeah, it was a big transition, to say the least.
I bet. That is quite a journey, and I can't wait to hear about, all about it. But before we do that, I want to go back to something you said for a minute. You are Native American, if I understand you correctly. And in my world in college admissions and financial aid, I will always hear people say, like, I am 1/25th Native American, so I'm going to put down that I'm Native American. And in fact, for the government, there's actually a definition of, you know, what percentage of your lineage has to be Native American in order for you to claim that. Would you mind telling us a little bit about kind of when you say I'm Native American, like, what that means?
Yeah, I can dive into that a little bit. So by the federal government, there is this card. It's called the CDIB, or the Certificate Degree of Indian Blood. And so for one to be able to actually obtain this card, you actually have to have like direct lineage of tribal members affiliated with a certain tribe, and it has to be a tribe that is actually recognized by the federal government as well. And so that again brings up many disparities and people wanting to claim indigenous identity and having that identity, but yet being unable to officially claim it by the federal government standards because they don't, in fact, have that CDIB card.
Okay, but you obviously do.
Yes, I do.
Okay, excellent. And you grew up on a reservation, at which point I said when we were preparing for this, I guess we all did at some point. And so kind of shout out to remembering that we're all on Native land. But yours is still Native land. What was your high school experience like? I would guess that this is not large public school.
Yeah, no, it was very interesting, especially even going to college in New York City. I really realized how much of a unique opportunity growing up in this like growing up on the reservation, where going to a high school and being Indigenous was the majority and not a minority. And then going to campus where I actually had to like really search to try and find somebody that had like the same identity or background as me. And so it was really shocking, you know, graduating from a class of 80 students, but yet still being Indigenous was the majority, was very liberating and free, which I really think inspired me and continues to inspire me in my Indigenous activism for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that part of your journey with us.
Yeah, Gavin, just to continue on this path a little bit, how did you get to the point where you decided, hey, I want to go to college? Was that always a part of your thinking and thought process as you were traversing through the high school journey and experience?
Yeah, I kind of remember that vividly. I remember always being told, at least by like my mom, that college was something that was what you had to try and pursue in life. And I really appreciate that. And it gave me the drive to want to go to college. But the thing is I only knew what my mom has went through. And so she went through the community college, and then after her associates got her bachelor's, and then from there became a teacher. And so that's what I was going to take, you know, a traditional route that is what is seen by many as less money is by getting an associate's degree at a community college and then moving up. And so that's what I was really focusing on doing up until my junior year, when I applied to the start of my junior year, whenever I applied to for the Alexander Hamilton Scholars. I didn't even think applying to an Ivy League was possible for me. I thought I was going to be lucky to be even going to a state school, and then to find out that all of these different opportunities were available for me just by the simple and assistive hand of Alexander Hamilton Scholars really, I think, prepared me and showed me that I was capable of doing more. Yeah. So it wasn't always on my table, but I'm glad that it is now.
Well, so you make a really good point about being very cognizant of college costs when you're from a family that clearly has some limitations about how much they can pay for college. Not only did you not go to community college, you went to one of the most expensive schools in the entire country. And so I'm wondering, how do you afford that? Talk to us about paying for college.
Wow. Thankfully, so far I am officially debt-free in my experience of college, which has been really, really exciting. But Columbia, it's very interesting because as you are attending these very, very expensive universities, they're also the ones that have the financial aid available. They're the ones that have these financial endowments from sponsors that are supporting financial aid. And so that has really allowed me to be able to attend Columbia on a full financial aid scholarship through... I believe they have a minimum of $150,000 by the parental guardians. I believe if you are below that amount, then you are 100% financial aid met, or they meet 100% financial need if your family is 100 or below $150,000, which is, I mean, rural Oklahoma. People that have $150,000, that's like basically a millionaire for us. And so, yeah, that it's financial aid through Columbia is what really has allowed me to really understand that though these high ranking universities, they have tons more resources and they're not afraid to use that on us. And I think they're definitely worth seeking out just for that.
And that's such a great point. The $150,000 you mentioned is something that some schools have adopted. Some schools have different dollar amounts. Some schools don't use it at all. And so it's very institution specific. But for our listeners, if you Google colleges that meet full need, you will find the list of schools that, like Columbia, pledge to meet the full financial need of their students. And for Columbia, they are using that $150,000 of parental income as their barometer for really the most robust funding. And so while they will meet full need for students whose families earn above that, the students whose families are below that really get more robust funding. And really, you've had some other kind of interesting opportunities through Columbia because they are robustly funded. Do you want to mention one?
Yeah, I think one that I can really go into that has really played into my own like academic success at Columbia is their own academic success programs, which I am put into, where they I get my own counselor that is specifically for this program. A dean of advising a dean. I get my own advising dean for them to help with college planning, advising. But then they're also there to help with financial, or they also provide extra aid when providing for. So at Columbia, we have this special thing called the core, and through the core curriculum, there are special classes that every student has to take. And these classes have like 20 books a semester. And so that can get very expensive. And so they actually provide the books or provide money to pay for those books, which is, again, stepping out and really, again, providing that robust financial aid and support to their FLY students, which I think is very one of the reasons why I'm so successful right now at Columbia.
That is amazing and such a tribute to the fact that you cannot judge a college by its price tag because you are not paying the price tag or anything close to it. I'm guessing that you'd never be able to go to Columbia if that was the case. And so this is, you are sort of the tribute to why applying for financial aid is important and then waiting to see what that school will cost you, because it is often significantly less than the price tag.
I'd like to ask a question, just given some of my own ignorance, right? So as I'm listening to you both share the story and you're talking through sort of where the money came from to pay for this, do you have to specifically ask for access to these programs? If you weren't aware of something like a QuestBridge scholar or sort of some of the other things that you may have had access to, Gavin, just trying to appreciate and understand for our listeners how they get line of sight to it if it's not something proactively being brought up with them.
Gavin, you want to take that one?
Wow. Yeah, so I think I really embody that question of what do you do when you don't know what to do and you don't know what resources are out there. And I think it was really just having to not be afraid to search. So many people, it's easy to ask for help. And then a lot of people will just be like, well, I don't know. I don't know like what to do. I don't know how to do that. And then they just accept that answer and move on. And instead of trying to find that answer, that's what I did. I tried to find that answer and I did a lot of researching online. I would do, even through like, student, support groups on like Reddit, or there's tons of scholarship websites, even ones just like scholarships.com, and just using these scholarship debt or search engines is where I found to be most successful in finding all of my, that's where I found the Alexander Hamilton scholars, was through the scholarship through the scholarship search engines. And so really, I think maximizing your resources. But again, if you don't have those resources available to you, search for them because they're out there.
Gavin, I loved your piece of advice of don't just accept an answer that doesn't that doesn't resolve your question. Just keep searching. Rashid, I'm going to put on my financial aid rabbit hole hat and go down that for a moment. And what happens sort of in broad brushstrokes is that every college student who would like to be considered for financial aid, they have to fill out what's called the FAFSA, which, you know, just rolls right off the tongue. It stands for the Free Application for Federal Student Aid. And again, like whether you're looking at community college, whether you're looking at Columbia or anything in between, you're filling out the FAFSA. Whether you want funding at the undergraduate level, at the master's level, or for a PhD, it's all still the FAFSA. The beauty of the FAFSA is that it works to really put every American family on a level playing field so that you can kind of be seen relative to other people. The downside of the FAFSA is that it tries to put every American family on a level playing field. And the problem with that is that we're not all created equal. And so if you have some very unique family circumstances, the FAFSA doesn't always give you the place and the space to consider that. That is a subject we'll talk way about another day. But when you fill out the FAFSA, the piece of advice that I would give everybody is give them what they want, give them everything they want, give them only what they want. This is the federal government, and it's just being entered into a big database, so nobody's reading handwritten notes. There is a supplemental financial aid form called the CSS profile. If CSS sounds familiar to you, it's the College Scholarship Service, which are the same friendly people that are at the College Board and same family of the SATs and AP and stuff like that. They have a whole financial aid division, and the CSS profile is a deeper dive into your family's finances than the FAFSA allows, because the FAFSA is just what the government wants to know. Schools with really significant amounts of their own institutional funding, like a Columbia, want to know more about your family's finances before they start giving out big sums of money. And so they will ask you to also fill out the CSS profile. And Gavin, my condolences for having to endure that form. I will guarantee it's probably not the most fun you've ever had. But in your case, certainly the payoff was so worthwhile. On the CSS profile, there actually is a little box that says, is there anything else we should know about you? And so that is one way, if you have a very unique family circumstance and you're required to fill out the CSS profile, you can put it there. We'll talk more about special circumstances on another episode, but just know that it's all about the FAFSA. Each school has their own financial aid website. If you go onto the admissions website, usually within the admissions website, you will find the financial aid website, and it will detail their own institutional requirements and deadlines. One of the really difficult things is that this is not a standardized process with standardized dates. And so, you know, if you are applying to 10 schools, there could be a whole bunch of deadlines, requirements, things you have to submit, things like that. And so it's really, really important that you do your research and that you keep kind of good notes. I think spreadsheets are your friends when it comes to the financial aid process, because it really helps you keep things organized. Sorry to digress. I will take off my rabbit hole hat now.
No, that was great. Thank you so much to both of you for just sort of breaking that down and making it something that people can connect the dots with. Gavin, as you have already shared with us, coming from Oklahoma, transitioning to sort of Columbia in New York City, what was that transition like for you? Talk a little bit about sort of going from your hometown to the Big Apple.
Yeah, it was definitely a transition, you know. I definitely think I also had like a little different transition, you know, being fly. Most people were flying to school, and I didn't have the funding for that. And so thankfully I was able to drive all of my items and luggage up there. But you know, again, that was still just the beginning of how different of an experience it was going to be. Even just walking outside, I probably see about the same amount of people that are in my town. And going through, I remember at the beginning of the transition at Columbia, I was really struggling, and I had to even meet with Linnell a couple times of just like talking about, like, you know, these are the classes that I'm taking and I'm having some struggles with the classes, or even some of the exams are going this way. I'm not sure what to do, or should I drop a class? Should I withdraw from a class? You know, like, what does it mean if I were to do this? Or like, so then they're saying all of these different scenarios. You know, and I, you know, it was all about my transition to Columbia, and really realizing that there was a bunch of, or there was different ways of doing things. Because I, you know, at my small town, or even my small school in Oklahoma, I wasn't very academically challenged. You know, I felt that it was very pretty easy for me. But then transitioning to that Ivy League level, everything was so much harder and difficult. And really, it was understanding in that transition period how to understand and how to shift my focus on turning in grades or turning in assignments on time. How do I be independent with, you know, hanging out with friends, but also managing enough time to do homework and enough time to do, you know, like balancing, even just making sure you have enough money to pay for groceries, or, you know, type of things like that. There was a, you know, it was a huge transition, I think. But really just diving head in is what I think made it so successful. Sorry, what were you saying?
I think one of the things that really made it so successful is the fact that you made the very conscious choice not to struggle by yourself. It can be a very difficult situation. It's very stressful. Maybe you're a little bit embarrassed that it's not going the way you thought it would. And I think a lot of people have the tendency to try to stem that leak themselves. And that, I think, can be really hard to do. And I think the fact that you reached out and you said, okay, this is what's not working. What do I do differently? Really allowed you to address it quicker, and then move on to the point where academically you've done great ever since, you know? And I think that it's so common that students, and particularly FLY students from, you know, Title I, underfunded schools, often there's teacher shortages or a lot of changing of teachers within a year. It is not uncommon to be a little bit shocked by the quality and quantity of work that college expects of you. And so, you know, kind of kudos for you for just sort of, you know, taking it by the horns. And I am obviously not from Oklahoma. You know, and really addressing it. I think that's something I see over and over again that young people struggle to do. So thank you for being a shining example of owning it and addressing it from there.
Yeah, I felt like it was very easy to be, you know, I could have hid, or I could have just tried to figure out what I could have done myself. But I think even talking to you, you know, we came up with a better solution than I probably ever could have came up with myself. So again, you're right. Talking to someone really helps just even out the playing field on like what all options you have. You know, there's always another option. It's just you didn't ask somebody for that other option.
Exactly. And there's only one of you going through this one time. You know, I have been doing this work for the, you know, nearly three decades. And so you start to see people's different experiences. You start to recognize patterns. You start to hear about what other students did that can work, and you share that. And so now you no longer just have the knowledge of one, but you have the knowledge of hundreds. And so I encourage everybody who is embarking on this journey to not go it alone. You know, I think finding a support network is key to success. You talked a little bit about, maybe this will be your answer to my next question. Maybe you've preemptively answered it. I wanted to ask about a challenge you faced and how you handled it.
Yeah, I think that was really, maybe I can just dive more into it and really kind of like explain the problem that was happening then. So, sorry, as I was, you know, transitioning to college, I had a previous diagnosis of ADHD, but it wasn't very affecting me, or it wasn't affecting me at my school. So I didn't seek any treatment for it. And it wasn't until I went to college and you have those background stressors, different environment, it really made my ADHD flare up. And it was really having to try and figure out how to like deal with that. But also like while you're still at college dealing with all those classes, you know, and the thing is I couldn't keep up with it. And so one of my classes I fell behind with, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. I was going to fail the class. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And, you know, so even though I did, you know, have to withdraw from a class, in the end of it, I feel like it has made me even better and stronger, you know. And even just this last semester, I had my highest GPA semester yet. So again, I feel like I'm still continuing to improve.
Thank you so much for really just being so incredibly honest and sharing that. You know, oftentimes things that you could manage in high school become so much more difficult. Because the workload is for real. It will be much heavier than anything you've experienced before. And you just don't always know what is going to rear its ugly head in the midst of that. And, you know, you're right. You know, like nobody wants to be on academic probation, but you didn't let it sink you. In fact, you used it as the springboard to do things differently and really thrive. So, so incredibly proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Rashid, you taking the next one or?
Sure.
Oh, so you know what? Let's see. No. Did we talk about, are we up to, what are you majoring in? Do we talk about that one? No. I think that's where we are. It was my bad. So, Gavin, could you talk to us a little bit about what you're majoring in and what made you choose that?
Yeah. So, again, at the very beginning, whenever I first went into college, I was really interested in the medical field, going into pre-med and doing biochemistry. But what I realized is that a lot of people want to go into the biomed field. And so they have these things called weeder classes where they try to weed out, you know, students that are in those fields. And they did, in fact, weed me out. And so, but I think it really, you know, during what I wanted to do by being a doctor, I was wanting to really help in like low income areas, like Doctors Without Borders. And so I really found out that I was really interested in more the sustainable side of medicine and like how much waste is in medicine and stuff as well. And so that's why I decided to step back and kind of take on another approach and do sustainable development. So that's what I'm currently studying, sustainable development. And then I'm really, really interested in my studying my indigenous heritage and continuing my knowledge about indigenous peoples in general. And so I'm also doing comparative ethnic studies because I wanted to, from my time, I studied abroad in Japan, and I wanted to be able to utilize my time abroad while also comparing it with my own indigenous heritage while looking at it through the sustainable lens.
Excellent.
Yeah. So thank you for just like a lot of the gems you've been dropping during the course of the journey so far. I've been hanging off of every word and really truly appreciate that. When you begin to reflect and think about some of the things you've been sharing where you've tapped into others or sought out guidance and support from different places and spaces. Can you talk a little bit about some of the specific communities that you've begun to find yourself a part of at Columbia, and what caused you to be involved in it, and why are they meaningful to you?
Yeah. So I remember it was the first year at Columbia, or no, the second year at Columbia, the first year I tried and I missed the club fair. And so I went to the second one and I was, you know, excited. I thought I was going to find like a bunch of indigenous communities or a bunch of indigenous clubs like I would find back home. And I was shocked to only have found two. It was the Malama Hawaii and the Native American Council. And so I was like, well, this is definitely, I have to try and join and get as much footing in as I can. And I found out to be extremely happy that I did. We end up getting a brand new brownstone on campus for and so we got a brownstone for the, it was called Indigia House, for just for Indigenous students and allies on Columbia. So it really was able to give us a space, because previously we didn't have a space for Indigenous people on campus. We were housed in what Columbia called special interest community housing. And so it was very, very interesting because, you know, they were calling Native American as being a special interest. And so now we actually have our own place. And that has really propelled our events and even our programming that we can have at Columbia. So that's what really I have been really a part of, is that Native American Council.
Can I put a footnote right there for our listeners? When Gavin talks about getting a brownstone are these beautiful old historic homes in New York City. It is quite an investment, one that most of us probably could not make individually. But I think it really speaks to Columbia's commitment to the Indigenous community and to making sure that they sustain it. So I just really want people to know, it's not like they bought some little duplex that was kind of a bargain thing and it's a little rundown. Like, this was a pretty incredible investment.
Yes, it was very incredible. We were very lucky to have it and very excited to. To your question, Linnell, I'm not.
Okay, that's fine. Let's see. Rashid, are you up next?
Yeah, I have another question. So what's something that has surprised you that you've learned about yourself during this journey in college?
I guess what has surprised me about myself through, I feel like in this college journey, I've become more self-aware, not just about myself, but also my place in the world around me. I feel like I've become a lot more grounded in kind of what it means to be even like human. And, you know, maybe it's just because it's the same time as the development of the prefrontal cortex, you know, that they relate with the same time. But I don't know. I feel like that's some of the things that I've really been thinking about and really questioning, I guess, really through college, even, you know, all of these texts is about what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be human and stuff like that? And I think it's kind of rubbed off on me. I think I'm starting to question those things myself. So.
Excellent.
Yeah, I love that. It's effectively really taking yourself on a journey of self-discovery and what's important to you as you reflect on your place in the greater community and world, right? So very, very deep and powerful thoughts that you're running through and engaged with. And so thank you for that answer.
So to end, we have a section we call College Condensed, a couple of just kind of quick rapid fire questions. I'll ask you, the first one is, what scared you most about going to college?
Well, what scared me the most was that I was going to be at least 2,000 miles away from the nearest family member, our nearest relative. So I think for me, that was what I was mainly going to be the most scared about, was what was I going to do if something happened? You know, what if there was an emergency? But, you know, thankfully, Alexander Hamilton Scholars, I wasn't alone. But also, Linnell was just a couple hours away.
I am, and kind of make a journey to New York City kind of often. I'm going to assume that fear abated or got put to rest fairly quickly since you went to Japan.
Yes, it did. You know, I started to realize that I can really create a family or like a family unit wherever I am. And really just like, you know, once you create that family unit, having to like rely on them and like be willing to like help and like rely on them as though it was a family unit, I think is really what's important.
And have you found those people at Columbia?
Yes, thankfully I have. Yes.
Excellent. Excellent.
So as you reflect and you think back so far in your journey, what would you say is probably one of your top college memories thus far?
Yeah, I was probably going to say my top college memory was not just studying abroad, but I was having a conversation and really thinking about your ancestors. And like we were talking about like the roaming of like your ancestors and wondering where they have ever been, you know, in, you know, the, you know, however long you want to think back, and really wondering that, like, am I one of the first of my ancestors to ever be in Japan? Because I know in my immediate family, I'm the first to ever leave, you know, the continental United States. And so it just makes me, it was very, a really humbling experience, to say the least.
Do you have a book, a podcast, a movie that you would want to recommend to our Fly listeners?
I do, actually. I do work on a podcast. It is called Untextbooked. I would highly recommend giving it a listen, where it is 15 students from across the United States, where it is a history podcast by youth for youth to talk about topics in history that have been whitewashed or erased, to bring them to the front and educate others.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. So that is Untextbooked. And do you want to tell our listeners where they might find it?
Anywhere that you find your podcasts. Perfect.
So as you sit here at this point in your college journey, if you were to find yourself stepping into a time machine and going back to have a conversation with Gavin pre-college, is there any advice that you haven't dropped yet that you would share with your younger self?
I'd probably say one thing that I really didn't realize until recently, but it's what Linnell helped bring out during my college application, during my essay, as I was writing it. I was having struggle writing my college essay and knowing what I should put in it, what I should say, you know, what reflects me as a person. And the first essay didn't. Linnell was like, maybe we should rewrite this. Maybe we should start from scratch. And I was like, So that was very hard, but I'm very glad that we did, because it really helped me realize the type of writing that was needed. It's more of telling a story, or it's using a story to really convey yourself. And I find that it's not even just when writing this application, but it's a very powerful essay format in general, which I never really even knew or explored, you know, just from like my education background. And so I think that's what I really wish I would have maybe known earlier, because I think if I would have employed that, those tactics a lot earlier and in more of my applications, I think I would have been more successful for sure.
only maybe more successful from Linnell making you rewrite it, but I would argue that you were pretty successful. And for our listeners, we call that when we talk to students about writing their college essay, what we say to them is show, don't tell. Don't tell me I am a leader. Cause like I have some vague notion of what that means, but I know nothing more about you now than I did before I read I Am a Leader. And Gavin, when you, if it's okay, can I divulge a little bit about your essay, which I remember it was so good that sitting here right now, and I had no idea you were going to mention it. So I've not looked it up. I have not refreshed my memory, and I still remember it because it was that good. The example that you used was about a program that had been cut at your school that was because of budget. And it was a program that was very near and dear to you. And it was about the lengths you went to and the tact that you learned and the, you know, ability to communicate with people in positions of power to ultimately get that program back in. And that essay could not have been more impactful about your ability to lead. And yet, I don't think you ever used the word lead or leadership in it. And it was a work of beauty.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I gotta say, Gavin, just having you as a co-host today and listening to your journey, you've spoken about sort of your identity and being able to dive deeper into the history, learning and tapping into that, finding and identifying community in your college world, the ability of you to be vulnerable and share with our Fly listeners today a little bit about some of the missteps you've had along the way and how you've corrected along the journey, right? So having those setbacks and having, you know, phenomenal comebacks, right? And just that resilience and being important to the journey and recognizing that, as well as just the ability to really tap into community and, to use your words, sort of establish familial units outside of your relatives and loved ones that can act as a support system. All of those things were incredibly powerful today. So for myself and Linnell and the rest of our Fly listeners, thank you so much for how you showed up on today's episode. Really, really valued your voice and thank you for your time.
Yeah, Linnell, thank you again for having me. I really, again, I'm glad to help.
Thank you, Gavin.